I think I don't do trade or money or fashion. I do art.
Hey, what's up? Welcome to episode number 672, I think, of Locked On Raptors for Monday, March the 2nd. I am your host, Sean Woodley of RaptorsHQ.com. You can find me on Twitter, as always, at WoodleySean. Find the show at Locked On Raptors. We can find links to every single episode of the podcast. And, of course, please make sure you are checking out the Locked On Podcast Network. We have team-focused shows covering just about every single team in the Big Four sports. If you like a team that plays the sports, we are almost certain to have a show with a local daily perspective covering that team for you. So please make sure you're searching that out and subscribing to, rating, and reviewing all of the shows that you would like to support on the Locked On Podcast Network. All right, on today's show, the Toronto Raptors lost two games over the weekend, have now lost three straight to fall to 42-18 on the season. And joining me, as he tends to do on Mondays, it's our pal Vivek Jacob. What's going on, man?
Not much, man. Ready to get this week started. Starting it off right, talking to you, talking Raptors, and obviously a bit of a struggle right now, but injuries are a big factor in that. So, yeah, we got to take these hits and then hopefully just get healthy before the playoffs, man.
Yeah, I think my biggest takeaway from the weekend in general is that this was the weekend where the sort of plucky underdog spirit of this team, sort of persevering in the face of injuries, it's kind of not cute anymore, and it's just like tiresome, and I think the entire team is kind of over it and is ready to just have healthy players. I think Nick Nurse, you could kind of sense on Friday when the news came down that Norm was going to play in the game, and then also the news came down in the same sentence from the Raptors PR folks that Serge Ibaka and Fred VanVleet were going to miss the game. You could just—it just seemed like it was a little bit deflating, and I think we've seen sort of a more ornery Kyle Lowry lately. I think we've seen a bit of a frustrated and sort of beleaguered Pascal Siakam at times, and I can only assume that a lot of that is due to the constant wave of injuries that seems to keep hitting this team. Anytime good news comes, bad news follows, and this season would not be the same if there weren't injuries, and I don't think it would be quite as enjoyable and fun as unexpected as it's been had there been, you know, health all the way through. So much of the joy of this season has been sort of created out of those moments where you have, you know, Chris Boucher and Rondae Hollis-Jefferson having to come in against the Lakers cold after injuries and performing well beyond expectations. There was the game against the Mavs where it was Kyle Lowry and like a bunch of, you know, second and third stringers who were, you know, just kicking ass, playing incredibly hard and winning that game basically on will alone, plus Kyle Lowry going like some sort of ungodly percentage from the field. And so, like, I think, again, a lot of the fun of this season has been the fighting through injuries thing. But at this point, we're only 22 games now away from the postseason, a month and a half. It's getting to the point now where it's just like, okay, we get it. This team is very fun and good when they are injured. Let's just get the guys back now and actually see what this team looks like all together. Because, there's not so much we can learn anymore from this ragtag crew doing, you know, fun things on night-to-night basis. And I think at this point, guys are just getting tired and worn down, and they're spreading themselves a little bit too thin. Do you kind of get that sense, too, that it's just like, all right, enough with this injury garbage?
Yeah, totally. And I think in particular, you can probably feel that way the most about Pascal Siakam because of the criticism that's now coming his way. And I think you look back at last season as well, he and Danny Green were the two guys that were consistently in the lineup, that were there throughout the regular season, played through the playoffs. Obviously, Siakam had an injury this season, but I think the number of times he's been expected to carry this team when the offense, quite frankly, is set up to be pretty democratic, I think you're looking at now a situation where people are having unrealistic expectations, and it's because of all the winning that they've done in spite of the injuries. And, you know, I remember coming into the season saying, hey, okay, I think, you know, I would expect them, without trades or whatever it is to finish with the 3 seed, have an outside shot at the 2 seed. But at the same time, you know, with Marcus Ole's contract situation, with Serge Ibaka's contract situation, that I wouldn't be surprised if a trade was made and then they finished up, you know, with sort of less than 50 wins, still a playoff team, still a good team. And you almost wonder if these expectations would still be there if they were around that, around what people expected before the season. And so, I feel for Siakam right now, and I'm sure he doesn't care. I think he's someone to take it all in spirit, and I think that's the big picture that we're all, that some people are missing out on right now. And, you know, if you look at his rookie season, gets sent down to the G League, takes some time to figure it out, and then comes back a better player. You look at the 25 straight threes that he missed when he was part of the bench mob, and, you know, that was literally an entire month where he didn't make a three, and everyone's like, hey, you need to stop shooting threes. You can't shoot threes. And that's why he's become the player he is now, right? Like, he's willing to go through it. He's willing to deal with it. He'll take all the criticism that comes, and he has that confidence that he will figure it out eventually. Like, again, he's someone that's played basketball for, what, 8-9 years now? So, this is something that he's experiencing for the first time, being the focal point of an offense, and being that focal point night in and night out is a lot different than sort of the 20 games that he had to do it for last season. And so I think he's going to be a better player for it. And you almost look at it as when someone goes through a sophomore slump, right? And it's like, how do they come back and how do they adjust to the adjustments? And so in terms of assessing Siakam, in terms of whether he can be a real number one option against elite teams, I think you have to almost wait for next season, because you have to wait for him to take in all the information that he's gathering right now and see how he responds to it next season. So, yeah, I think people just need to cool it with Siakam right now and just, I understand, sure, criticize, you know, the things he's doing in the moment, but to sort of rule him out as, no, why are they doing this? He's not that type of player. This is the only way he's going to learn.
Yeah, I'm with you. So I've been, like, I think a lot of us have had our sort of expectations changed a little bit, right? And sort of the baseline belief of what Siakam could be coming into the year, I think it was a lot lower than he sort of showed flashes of in the early part of the season. And, you know, that was a really great stretch. But I also think if you were looking at this season and not expecting some sort of growing pains from him, you were kind of naive and kind of missing exactly what this season was going to be about for the Raptors. And Nick Nurse said a couple weeks ago that they were really going to start coming out of the All-Star break, start trying to funnel things through Siakam more, make him more of the primary guy, just to see what he can do with it. And this isn't to say that they'll run the offense through Siakam heavily now and then continue that in the playoffs. I think they kind of know the other places they can go in the postseason, whether it's, you know, Kyle initiating things in pick and roll, whether it's Gasol running things from the elbow, assuming that he's healthy, whether it's Fred as a secondary ball handler. Like, they know other ways they can butter their bread, but if you're looking at sort of trying to maximize your upside, Pascal Siakam is the way to do that. He is the pathway to having something close to what you had last year in Kawhi, where it's just like an automatic bucket against against good defenses when things and the chips are down. Like, Pascal is the guy. If anyone on the team is going to become that guy, he is the one. And so you have to, I think, right now, sort of deviate a little bit and go away from sort of the things that typically make you successful just in the interest of getting him reps. And it was always going to come with growing pains. It was always going to come with him sort of trying to find the balance between aggression and passiveness and when to, you know, settle for the three and when to not. And, you know, I think he's going through now a little bit of what DeMar did in the time before he really became like a guy who got to the line a ton. He would have his frustrations as well when he wasn't getting calls and before that reputation was built. And I think that's a big part of the struggles for Siakam right now too, is he seems to be getting to the right places to try to get, you know, easy trips to the line and things like that, but he's just not quite caught up reputation-wise, or he hasn't quite mastered the art of getting fouled. And that's also part of this process, right? It's all part of the sort of testing ground that this season is supposed to be. And that was always the plan coming into the year. That was always what the season was about. It's, you know, it doesn't necessarily have to be a damning thing if this season proves that Pascal Siakam is not a number one option on a championship team. That's fine. He's already proven he can be like a number two. And that is a really good place to be and a really good player to have. And this season is about seeing exactly where his limits are. And maybe we won't find out what his limits are this season. Maybe we see, you know, what he does this year. Like you said, he sort of takes all that information in. He learns from it. He applies what he learned in his off-season training regimen. And then next season, we see sort of what his limits can be. And so you have this sort of two-year runway before that big summer where you're trying to do some big things to know exactly what it is that you need to pair with Pascal Siakam for the future. And so it's all part of the process, man. And I think the Raptors winning a bazillion games and being in the running for the two seed, it's kind of, I think, clouded what the real purpose of this season was, which was testing ground for Siakam and OG to see what you have there, and also just sort of like a noble running it back with all the old guys trying to defend their title in the most noble way possible. And all of those things have been accomplished at this point. And I made the point last night, and maybe this is a little bit hyperbolic, but I think it's kind of important considering Raptors fans tend to get really aggrieved very quickly whenever things go poorly. Like, the Raptors are 42-18 right now.
Yep.
In theory, they could, this is what I said, and again, maybe it's a little bit over the top, but they could lose out and go finish 42-40 and get swept in the first round, and I still think this season would have served its purpose and would have been a net positive in general. And you have the 15-game winning streak in there, you have a lot of really fun, awesome individual moments, and this season was likely never to end in a title anyway, so if that happens, yes, it would be obviously terrible. They're also not obviously going to lose 22 straight games. Like, let's not get crazy. Let's not, you know, be so literal when you're, you know, picking apart my point. But I think the point stands is that this season has served its purpose, and especially as it comes to Pascal, and even more so lately as they've ramped up his usage. And again, I think once guys get back, it'll be a lot easier for him, and he'll be able to, A, sort of fall back into, I don't want to say like a secondary role, but he'll be able to pick his spots a little bit more selectively, which is always a good thing. And you'd never want to have to force things to make a defense know exactly what's coming. And I also think like his role, when they do sort of throw it to him and say, all right, Pascal, you're still number one, go do the things, it's going to be a lot easier when he's not kicking out. Like, there was a play in the game on Sunday where he drove and kicked out, and it created a wide open three. It just happened to be a wide open three for Chris Boucher, because on the one side of the floor, it was Patrick McCaw on the left wing and Chris Boucher wide open in the left corner with, I think, Davis and Powell dotted around. And like, obviously the Nuggets were keyed up on Davis and Powell, and they were okay with McCaw and Boucher getting wide open looks. And it's going to be so much easier when it's Fred VanVleet and Serge Ibaka and Marcus Gasol in those spots spacing the floor for him. So it's all going to feed into, I think, Pascal kind of settling into this at some point here. It's just, you know, it's a growing pain period right now. They don't have any large people on the floor. He's getting tasked with, you know, battling centers on the glass and defending centers a little bit here, as Rondae Hollis-Jefferson's been a little bit hit and miss over the last couple games. And it's all kind of understandable, I think, that he's putting up these wobbly shooting lines. And still, the flashes are so promising when you see them. I mean, there was a stretch in that Charlotte game where he was just, like, destroying the Hornets by just being direct and forceful and brutish as the way he was driving to the rim. And that's still there. Like, he still has that in his bag. I just think with all the other responsibilities and all the other sort of things on his plate right now, as they're trying to amp up his responsibilities, it's become a bit of a struggle. And I think that'll alleviate eventually if they ever get guys back and healthy, which maybe they won't. And we should stop talking in those terms, because it seems like maybe we're just in a perpetual wheel of injuries taking place and then happening again once those other injuries are healed. But yeah, it's probably going to be okay. He's a very, very good player. Like, I don't know. Do you have any last thoughts on Pascal before we move on?
I guess the final thing I'll sort of tack on is just that I think in general, maybe because of the way the NBA is, it's almost built into our subconscious that, you know, if you're a tanking team, then it's okay. Then you have to be patient. Then you have to, you know, let all these guys learn how to win and learn how to make winning plays and all that. But all of a sudden, if you have a winning team, it's like, no, you have to have your number one guy, you have to have your number two guy, and the team around it, and they're all supposed to play this way. But the Raptors just are able to afford the luxury of both. They're able to win and they're able to try and figure it out at the same time. That's what's been so beautiful about the way they've been able to succeed these last few years, right? You look at Norman Powell going down to the G League, coming back and being an impactful player in the playoffs. You look at Fred VanVleet, the lessons that he's taking. You look at Pascal Siakam. That's just been a part of how they've succeeded. And so, again, they're probably going to keep winning for some time, and then they're going to have players that sort of go through these development stretches while they're on the court. Guess what? You're not going to send Siakam down to the G League to figure out stuff again. He's going to go through it. He's going to go through it at the NBA level.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it's going to suck sometimes to see him go through it, but that's how he's going to get better.
Absolutely.
And, yeah, I'll leave it at that.
Yeah. One other note, too. Again, I've said this all season long. This was the Hakuna Matata season and remains so. So, first of all, even if things go poorly and Pascal flames out in the playoffs in spectacular fashion, just go and cuddle yourself up in your championship merch, number one. And number two, the other thing about Pascal is that I think maybe there's the burgeoning compulsion to compare him to DeMar DeRozan a little bit in terms of the wonky shooting lines, but that comparison will never fly because he's also just a remarkable defender who's been kicking ass at that end lately. And even in his bad offensive games, he's doing crazy, crazy things picking off Nikola Jokic outlet passes, and he's great rim protection and things like that. He still offers so much at that end, he's kind of a microcosm of this team, right? Where yes, the offense can be a little bit up and down at times, and the half-court offense can be a struggle, but you know there's a floor on defense that's incredibly high and will keep them in it, and that's the Pascal story, right? His offense will fluctuate, but his defensive contributions are so notable, and they have been, I think, especially lately, that he's always going to come out positive in the wash just because of what he does on that end. And then, when he has his great offensive nights, he becomes an absolute just freaking terror and a marvel to watch. So I think we can probably leave the Pascal talk there for now. And, clearly we're not sounding too many alarms, and hopefully we can calm some people down with this conversation. Some other stuff from the weekend. The main thing we should probably get into is OG Anunoby, who had 13 steals over two games on the weekend. I thought he was the best player on the floor against the Hornets on Friday, and it went a little bit unspoken, I think, just because Kyle Lowry had that fourth quarter where he almost brought them back into it, and the team in general was kind of bad, and I think that was mostly the conversation afterwards, was just how poorly the Raptors had played as opposed to the great things that OG Anunoby was doing. And then he followed it up and doubled how awesome his performance was, quite literally on the point side of things, but just in general against the Nuggets on Sunday. We've always known he's a very good defender. That's never been a question. It's sort of been, the stat accrual on defense that's maybe been something he hasn't quite had, whether it's blocks or steals. It's usually just very good anecdotal defense. You look at him and it's like, oh man, he locked that guy up in one-on-one coverage. He seems to be adding all that other stuff now where he's more of a terror, he's more of a menace, he's breaking up pick and rolls, he's jumping passing lanes, and he's kind of doing those above and beyond things as opposed to just good team defense that are really swinging things. I don't know, is it too early to say this is him turning a corner a little bit here? We saw him play very well early in the season too, and then a bit of a doldrum in the middle, so maybe it's not fair to say he's turned a corner, but I don't know. What have your thoughts been on the recent run from OG Anunoby, who just looks dynamite right now?
I think the most encouraging thing is the fact that, let's face it, before when there were stretches with the injuries where you were saying, hey, man, really need something from OG in terms of the offense and getting himself going and helping the team out with that. And so you've seen that here. And that is something that if he can carry over and do it the way he's been doing it with the efficiency, because he's able to get out in transition off these steals, then that's ideal. But I think it definitely needs to be more of a sustained stretch. It doesn't need to be as crazy as it was against the Nuggets, where he finishes with 32 points on 16 shots. But I think defensively, I think we all know what he can do. One-on-one, you can match him up against anyone in the league pretty much. The fact that he can go up against Jokic and be as impactful as he was, I think was super encouraging. I think when you look at what he's maybe figuring out from a team concept is sort of being a step ahead of the play and understanding where he can dig in, where he can maybe cheat a little bit and get those deflections. And I think that will take him to another level in terms of complementing his on-the-ball defense. And so offensively, I think, yeah, there's still strides to be made. The consistency with the three-point shot, we'll see over time. But yeah, in terms of his handle, in terms of one-on-one moves, we're seeing a bit more of him recognizing when he's got a smaller guy on him, when he's got a weaker guy on him, and just sort of going right at them and using his body to create separation and finish at the rim. So those are the big things that you want to see more consistently. And yeah, again, hopefully guys like Mark can help open things up. Having Norm in the lineup probably helps as well. So yeah, hopefully he can keep this going, because it's been pretty damn exciting to watch.
Yeah, man, he's a freaking terror, and it's in the best kind of way. And I'm almost wondering if maybe the answer, I'm not sure when Serge Ibaka is going to be back. I hope it's sooner than later, obviously. But I'm almost wondering if the answer to their issues right now with the lack of bigs is just play OG as the center. The way he's rebounded, I mean, he had a couple rebounds like over Jokic last night in crunch time that were just like, holy shit, like that is not easy. And he's just so damn strong. He's taken advantage, I think, of his strength a couple times. He had a couple great post-ups last night, like one very heinous crime against Jamal Murray, I think, in particular, with a nice like Pascal looking drop step. And you know, he just seems to have sort of the thickness and the strength to hang and bang with those guys down low. I think he had 9 boards in the game against the Hornets on Friday as well, and he was really the only guy who was able to sort of overcome Bismack Biyombo, who, man, I really wish they would have bought out that day and left in Toronto. Would have been lovely. Not going to happen. Yeah. But like, just throwing OG sort of in that dunker spot where he seems to be very comfortable, have him be a screener, because he is a very good, strong screener, I think as well, and has shown some nice things on the short roll this season, too. If you're not happy with what Rondé's doing, maybe you just go with, like, a Lowry, Powell, Davis, or when Fred VanVleet's back, you throw Fred in there as well with Pascal at the 4 and then OG at the 5, and maybe roll with that, because he's kind of shown more, I think, acumen at dealing with that spot than anyone else on the team has. He's such a bruiser, man, and he's very clearly one of the strongest players on the floor, if not the strongest player on the floor anytime he's playing. So that's kind of my thought there. He's really, really good, and what he did against Jokic was really impressive. I know Jokic had his game and he kicked ass, but I think OG gave him a lot of problems. And you know, there's only so much you can do when you don't have a center against Jokic, right? I think Will Lou posted the screen cap. They had like 5 guys around Jokic, and it's just like, he's such a good passer that even when you do that, you're just opening up all kinds of pain elsewhere. And it was a really, really tough matchup to go out with no center. I thought OG gave them the best shot, which is all you could ask for, I suppose. And on the offensive side, too, I mean, I think a lot of the stuff he does, he's pretty good at, and it's pretty refined. I mean, the off-the-bounce stuff is a little bit quirky at times, and he takes some time to make his reads, but if you give him to him in the post, like, he's strong enough. He's like, whenever he's around the basket, he seems able to finish, whether it's under the basket when he's, you know, getting offensive rebounds and things like that, or he's cutting. Like, he's always seemed able to rise up in that little sort of pocket of space that he can find, and, you know, whether it's like the chin-up reverse dunks or anything like that, like, he seems pretty good there. And his three-point shot is as average and or slightly above average as it's always been. So I don't want to say that he's like making a leap to, you know, like some sort of like Pascal leap or anything like that, but it is nice to see him playing with confidence. It seems like he's more part of the offense, and we'll see if that holds up once more guys come back, because I think Nurse has kind of pointed that out this season, is that he's kind of ended up being the forgotten guy at times on offense when they do have all their pieces healthy, and that I think leads him to get a little bit passive, a little bit sort of more pressing when the ball does come to him. And so we'll see how that translates with a full lineup. But for now, it's been a delight to watch. He's so, so exciting when he pulls off things like he did last night. And I was just like, just in awe watching him last night. Every single possession, he was doing something to help blow it up, and you couldn't take your eyes off of him. And to me, it was one of the more impressive single games I've ever seen from a Raptor. I mean, 32 with 7 steals and 7 boards. Like, that's pretty nuts on the 12 of 16 shooting as well. I was just as upset to see the Raptors lose that game as I was when, like, Terrence Ross put up 51. Like, that's how impressive it was to me. And I'm not sure I could go back and, like, name too many more impressive individual performance from like a non-star Raptor. It was pretty wild stuff, and hopefully we see more of that going forward here, because that OG changes things, changes the sort of the calculus for the Raptors too, and it changes what you need from Pascal. It changes what you need from everybody when he's chipping in that much, especially on the defensive end. So gotta love to see it. OG Anunoby kicks ass.
Yeah, defensively.
Yeah.
No, I was just going to say defensively, that's probably the most Kawhi-like he's looked, right? In terms of just like stealing candy from the baby, just batting the ball out every time. And Josh Lewenberg had that tweet that, you know, there's only, what, seven guys who have done it over the last 30 years. John Wall, Dwayne Wade, Chris Paul, Kevin Garnett. Don't know who Chris Morris and Hersey Hawkins are, but Hakeem Olajuwon. And then, of course, Michael Jordan did it four times, which is just insane. But, yeah, in terms of an individual game performance, is definitely one of the most special things we've seen from a Raptor. Probably one that we'll remember for quite a while. Sucks that it'll be less remembered because it came in a loss. But, yeah, pretty special performance, pretty exciting tease of what he's capable of at his best. And obviously there's still a long way to go in his development, so long may it continue.
Hey, man, I've done the Lord's work in ensuring that there's never any Terry 51 erasure, despite that being a loss. I feel like we can do that for the OG 32 and 7 game as well. So just follow my lead, everybody. any parting shots, Big V, before we wrap up here on the weekend games? We can take things from them, I suppose, but it's also so many grains of salt, and just the injury thing keeps hanging over everything.
Hey, man, like, you know, I'd love to see it one day. It's not going to happen, but 58-game schedule, man. 58-game schedule.
Well, in a 58-game schedule, they would be now two games into the playoffs with all of these guys injured. Think about that.
Well, no. You just spread it out, man. You just spread it out.
Yeah.
And you don't have all these injuries.
I know what you mean. I know. I'm just, as a person who likes 82 games, I'm just playing the other side of things. I think we can probably leave it there. This was a lot of fun, man. Thank you so much for jumping on for our usual Monday chat. Do you have anything you're working on that people should check out?
I'm doing a couple of previews this week for Raptors Republic. I am going to dive into Siakam's finishing at the rim. That is one thing that I think, just watching the last few games, I'm like, and I remember last season his finishing being so great at the rim that I was like, I don't know that this is sustainable. So yeah, I just want to look at kind of some film and see what's going on there, if there's any major differences between last season and this season. So I'll probably have something up on that. And yeah, that's pretty much all you can look forward to from me this week. I'm sure there are much bigger things coming from you, Sean, Mr. Raptors feature writer.
Yeah, I got some fun stuff coming. A couple of pieces probably dropping over the course of the next week as I get my month started as the Raptors.com writer of the month. So please download the app. I think that you can get push notifications whenever things come down. So you get the Raptors app, and I guess you'll also get Popeyes deals in there too when the moment calls for it, if they still do that. Do they still do that? They should probably know that. Anyway.
No, they don't.
Oh, very disappointing. I guess 12 threes is such a 12 threes is so easy when you have Matt Thomas on your team that talk about a catch 22 for Alex Wong.
Well, they have the McDonald's fries.
Okay. Well, that's fine, I suppose. But yeah, get the Raptors app, and you'll get all of my pieces there under like the fans tab and the feature editorials, I think, is the place you want to go for all that. And you can go read all the work from the other great writers, the much better writers than I, who have already written for Raptors.com this month. So check or this year. So go check those out. Katie Heindel wrote some amazing stuff last month, as you might expect. And yeah, so that's going to do it. You can subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcasts, iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Play. Tell a friend. If you have a Raptors fan friend who doesn't listen to podcasts, suggest this podcast to them. I would very much appreciate it. We're always looking for new listeners. And as much as we appreciate the existing ones, never a harm to bring more people under the Locked On Raptors umbrella. Anyway, that's going to do it. Thank you so much for tuning in, and we will talk to you on Tuesday with another episode of Locked On Raptors.